All right, good to go. Hi, everyone. My name is Dr. Jeremy Losak. I am an assistant professor at Syracuse University in our sport analytics department. I'm being joined by Joey Sable, who is a graduate student at Syracuse University. And we're here to talk about, as Scott mentioned, home field advantage without fans in the stands. So this is a fun paper that we got to work on. As soon as baseball announced that there weren't going to be fans in the stands, research idea immediately popped up, and it's really, really interesting and answers a question that I've had for a while as to what effect do fans ultimately have on this idea of home field advantage. So I'm going to kick it off to Joey. He's going to talk a little bit more about, introduce our topic.
So what really changed in 2020? I mean, obviously a lot of things, the first of which is the start date. We know that the 2020 season started in July rather than in April. And this has some really big changes that come with it. One of which is weather. Some teams that are very much impacted by weather early in the season, include the Rockies and the Twins, with those high elevation or northern cities, they have the potential for snow. And with all of the season happening in the summertime, that could have some effects. Another big change, as we can see with the outlined divisions here, these are the only teams that played against each other. There were no across country road trips. There were no really long distance games. And this smaller group of teams playing against each other might have also had some effects on home field advantage. Another thing that I feel like is a big deal is the safety protocols and the player game day experience in 2020 compared to 2019. Those are very different, where both home and away teams, they have to go through, or they had to go through, COVID testing every day. And that might have led to some discomfort and some unfamiliarity, which would have hurt the home field appeal of trying to be at home. Unexpected schedule changes happened throughout the season, especially early in the season, where some teams had some long stretches of time where they didn't play other teams. And this didn't only impact them, it impacted their opponents who would have been playing these games. These games had to be made up in doubleheaders, which also had the rules changed during 2020, where they would be 2 7-inning games. This changes home field advantage, where sometimes the games don't even make it to 9 innings. And with those lack of 9-inning games, there are less opportunities for last licks, which is a big important thing with home field advantage. And lastly, there were some examples where some teams were playing at their home ballpark, but they were designated as away. So they would hit second in their own ballpark. And this again also has to do with some change in unfamiliarity. But the biggest change that we all noticed during the 2020 season was a lack of fans in the stands. This obviously was apparent to us as fans, but also to players on the field, where they didn't see anything in the stands except for maybe some cardboard cutouts. This lack of attendance is something that they may not have experienced in a long time since their early years in the lower minor leagues. So this lack of attention and attendance really might have changed up the game day experience for a lot of the players. There were no natural or very few natural noise in the crowds. And it might have been even weirder for players where there was artificial noise getting pumped into the stadium. In theory, any of these things could have come into play during 2020. You're muted.
Yeah, sorry about that. So what we did in our paper was we took this opportunity as kind of a natural experiment. In 2020, there's this exogenous shock where teams throughout baseball could not have fans in the stand. This is something that was dictated by Major League Baseball. The entire 2020 regular season, no fans in the stands. So we treat that as a natural experiment where before we used 2019 as a control group. So 2019, baseball played as normal. 2020, this shock occurs, okay? And we take advantage of that. And the idea behind our approach is we think about all the things that would have changed between 2019 and 2020. We try to control for those things, where all that's left and what we're trying to then tease out is this effect of fans in the stands. traditionally, it's been difficult to isolate the exact causes of home field advantage, strictly because you often see a lot of these things happening simultaneously. Well, given this change, we could try to pull out some of these effects.
One would think that removing fans might have a negative impact on home field advantage, but it looks like it was the opposite. In 2020, it had the highest winning percentage for home teams in about a decade since the 2008 to 2010 seasons. This is not arguing that there was no home field advantage in 2019. I'm saying that they're explicit that there very much was home field advantage in 2019, but in 2020, it looks like it was higher. This is statistically significant at the 50%. This is statistically significant compared to the 2019 season. There's a really good article by Ben Lindbergh that I want to show you all because it shows some really good context for this, where he took a look at some home field advantage effects as well. One of the first ones he took a look at was the home team run differential per game. And we can see that there was a really big jump between 2019 and 2020. And this offensive boom was also noticed in the OPS differential between 2019 and 2020. One thing that I think is really interesting that he did a lot of research on was the umpiring effects and whether there was any kind of bias. We can see that between 2019 and 2020, there was no real change in the bias between out of the zone strikes. And you would expect that with this kind of bias that umpires might call there to be fewer strikes out of the zone for home teams because of the crowds, but there didn't really seem to be too much of a difference. There was still the home field advantage on umpire calls was apparent, but it appears it was a little bit muted because if you look at the difference between in the zone called balls, the away hitters had just about the same percent of those called the same as the home hitters. So next, I'm going to hand it back off to Jeremy with the models that we took a look at.
Okay, perfect. And Joey, if you wouldn't mind sharing the link to the article, just so everyone could have access to that in the chat. Perfect. Yes. So what we did was we took it a step further. So what's been shown just anecdotally is that in fact, there was an increase in home field advantage. What we wanna do is again, we wanna tease out these individual effects and try to identify what, after we've pulled everything out, what exactly can be attributed to the lack of fans in the stands. Okay, so our model takes advantage of it's an event study essentially, where the event is the lack of fan, or not really an event study, but there is an event that happens, no fans in the stands. We compare the 2020 season, this season's an important variable in our model. It's the season without fans in the stands in comparison to 2019. We interact this variable with a number of other variables that might've seen a difference in 2019 versus 2020, game day, which I'll talk about in a second, travel, which I'll talk about in a second. We consider other covariates as well. We have two main models. The first model focuses strictly on home field advantage, and the second model focuses on betting markets. We're interested in betting markets for a number of reasons. Betting markets traditionally will give you information as to how much things are worth, how valuable certain things are, like home field advantage. Usually home field advantage is something that is priced into betting markets. We want to see how markets react to this new shock. There, up until this point, there really aren't any historical, there isn't any historical precedent as to fans not being in the stands. So we wanted to see how betting markets might have responded to this shock. Okay, so we run these two models, both are logistic regressions. And again, that's kind of what we look at. Just to show you a little bit what we're talking about, this looks at travel loads, 2019 versus 2020. This looks at the difference in travel loads and more specifically travel loads within the previous 5 days between 2019 and 2020. What this density plot shows is that differences in travel loads are much more centered limited around zero in 2020 relative to 2019, which makes a lot of sense given the regional nature of the schedule. Okay, and given these different distributions, we wanted to identify, again, given that this is one of the differences between 2019 and 2020, given that travel looked very different, we want to control for this in our model. So then again, what's left at the end of the day is just the fans in the stands. That's what's left in our season variable. Here's the summary stats of our variables for our model. I want to start on the top right over here. We have measures of home OPS, away OPS, home adjusted game score, and away adjusted game score. Our OPS measures here take into account the players who are in the lineup for that game. We pulled their last 15 days worth of box score statistics, again, for the players specifically in the lineup for that game. And we calculate a total home OPS score. We do the same thing for the away team. The reason we use OPS, part of it is ease of frequency in terms of box score statistics. And the reason we use kind of this 15 game average as opposed to some other measure of offensive talent is because we want to account for the fact that there was a lot more variability in lineup construction in 2020 due to players missing games, being pulled out at the last second, a lot more turnover in the lineup. So we wanted to make sure our offensive measure controlled for the fact that, you know, a team playing on this day could look very different a week later. So we wanted to control for that. The game score measure, and the game score measure is actually, it's funny that the Diamond Dollars case competition is related to this game score question. So I'll be interested to see the encore presentation following our presentation. But this game score measure is essentially looks at the game score of the starting pitcher over the last five games, over his previous five starts, adjusts this number based on the quality of the opponents that he faced. So again, so we add some context to this measure and then aggregates that together. It also takes into account things like the opener strategy or bullpen days. So it takes into account these other areas as well. The reason we use game score as opposed to some other measure of a pitcher quality, of which there are plenty of better metrics in terms of pitcher quality, is because we wanted to capture the benefit of a measure like game score is it captures their performance in that game overall. And it's probably a bit more predictive in terms of the team's ability to win, partially because it captures the length of the start, which is something that would likely matter. On the bottom right, we have this variable called not home designated. As Joey mentioned earlier, this variable captures when the team who is playing in their home ballpark happens to be listed as the visiting team. So it captures some of those last lick effects that, again, in the era prior to COVID, it's hard to differentiate what's last licks versus which home field advantage because you never see the away team playing in their home stadium. So this allows us to pull that out. This represents about 25 games in 2020. So we have that data. On the left-hand side, we have the rest of our covariates. First, we have measures of game number. So the first number here, home game number, represents how many games the home team has played up until this point in the season. The reason we include this variable is essentially to look at how does home field advantage change as the season goes along. Do players become accustomed to home field changes in home field advantage? Is there some sort of just change as the season goes on? The next variable, game day, we use specifically in our betting model. This variable looks at how many days into the season games have been played. So there were 67 days in the 2020 MLB season where games actually occurred. The idea behind using this variable is that we're capturing how betting markets might have evolved as the season went along. Travel difference, both we measure that from a 5-day perspective, 10-day perspective, we split it up home and away. Travel difference looks at how much the home team has traveled minus how much the away team has traveled. The way we look at travel is we use, in the case of the 5-day measure, we look at where the team might have traveled over the previous 5 days and using a weighted sum based on how many days in the past that travel occurred, we aggregate that measure. So let me give you an example. So suppose we're in the first game of a series, the Chicago Cubs traveled to the Cincinnati Reds, okay? And let's say there's no off day in between. So that distance between Chicago and Cincinnati, we use longitudinal data of the ballpark and get exact mileage between the two stadiums. That mileage variable counts as the travel for that day. And that gets the full weight because it's travel within the last 24 hours. If there's an off day, we push the travel back a day, so it doesn't get as much of a weight, and we have diminishing the travel matters as we get further and further into the future. We played around with a couple of different weighting schemes. It didn't seem to matter in terms of the final results, so we feel pretty good about that. At the bottom, we have the difference between the two, and we also have home travel and away travel, okay? As to be expected, there is much more travel in 2019 relative to 2020. At the bottom, we have implied win percentage. This comes from Moneyline data from EV Analytics. So thank you to them for providing us with their Moneyline data. This is based on consensus market, Moneyline market data that we then convert into implied win percentage. Last variable we have down here is games played over the last 10 days. This was especially interesting in 2020, where in some cases you had teams playing with multiple days off due to games getting canceled, and some teams playing as many as 15 games in a 10-day stretch. So again, we want to control for those differences in game workload, which was much more significant variance in 2020 relative to 2019. Before we get into our results, I do want to emphasize that we did consider different measures of travel load and game day measures. We didn't, for the sake of brevity in this presentation, we don't go into all of them here, but I do want to emphasize that we did look at some of these different measures. For travel, for instance, we do recognize that travel in 2019 may have looked very different in travel in 2020, especially with the perspective that there were long distance trips taken in 2019 that just simply never happened in 2020. So in one specification, we separate out distance and long distance. Doesn't substantially change our results. On the game day side, there are measures of, on game day, we have a measure, for example, that looks at, instead of number of game days, we have it broken down based on quarter of the season. So first quarter, second quarter, third quarter, fourth quarter. We also include a measure that looks at, that synchronizes the schedules. So game one of the 2020 season takes place around the same point that game, let's say 100 or so takes place in the 2019 season. So we do include a couple of different specifications. It doesn't substantially change our results. So I'm going to turn it over to Joey to talk about our initial results.
So for our initial results, our dependent variable was a home win, either one or zero. I first want to start looking at the right side of this table. These are pretty intuitive. They seem to make a lot of sense where as the home offense or pitching does better, we would expect the home team to win more often. And if the away pitching and hitting is better, we would expect the home team to win a little bit less often. The season variable, this is a dummy variable, zero or one looking at 2019 or 2020. This should capture the effect of the fans in the stands. And since it is not statistically significant, we can't really tell if there is evidence of fans having a positive impact on a home team winning or not. Not home designated, as we mentioned, this is for the 25 games in the 2020 season where the home team was hitting first in their own ballpark. This is not statistically significant either, but this might be due to a small sample size. So we can't really tell if this has much of an impact. The game number, as Jeremy talked about, this is how many games into a season a team has played, and we can tell that it is statistically significant when interacted with season. So this shows that in 2020, there is some effect with the game number over time impacting home winning percentage, and we will get to that on the next slide. For the travel difference in the last five games, or the last 5 days, we see that this is not statistically significant, so there is not really much of an impact on home winning percentage for how much travel has been had by the home teams in the last 5 days.
All right, so just again, I wanna emphasize once more this main result. The main result here is that after we've controlled for differences in 2020 versus 2019 that we do observe, what we're left with in this season variable is something that's not statistically significant, which at least suggests to us that there's no evidence of home fans having any sort of effect on home field advantage. So I just really wanted to emphasize that result. We did want to look at game number for a second, just because that was one of the differences between 2019 and 2020 that did come back statistically significant. Early on in the season, there is no statistical evidence of differences between the two. It is lower statistically, but there's no, at least statistically, there's no statistically significant effect. But as the season goes on in 2019, there's no real variation, but in 2020, there is an increase. Now, there's a couple of possible explanations for this. It could be the case that players did, in fact, have to go through some adjustment period. We're just not picking it up due to sample size. And then as the season got on, they became more comfortable. That's one possible story. Another possible story is that we have random statistical noise later in the season, which I'm going to talk about here. This plot here breaks down home win percentage based on the first, second, third, and fourth quarters of the season. As you can see, and it pretty much mirrors the previous plot. The first quarter of the season for 2020 is much lower than that of 2019. But after that, you see it shoots up. And then by the end of the season, it's up substantially. All right. So again, this could be statistical noise. There might have something to do with the way that September call-ups were used in 2020. In fact, there were less September call-ups in 2020. So it's possible that lower tier teams weren't necessarily playing down as much as they might have otherwise, and they were winning maybe more games. It's difficult to identify for sure, but the key to note here is, again, there's no evidence that lack of fans led to a lower home field advantage, which again is the story that we're trying to tell here. Looking at the betting market model, we look at, again, at how do betting lines predict win probability. Under the efficient market hypothesis, all of the information related to the probability of the home team winning should be captured in the win probability variable, such that if any of these other variables are statistically significant, that might be some sort of evidence of a market inefficiency. And really what we see here, the game day variable matches pretty closely with what we saw on the previous slide in terms of home field advantage. So what that means is, again, as the season went on, the home team won more and betting markets didn't pick that up. I wouldn't go as far as to say that that is a market inefficiency. It could simply be, again, big, small sample variance. Home teams won a lot more at the end of the season. I wouldn't necessarily call it a quote unquote market inefficiency necessarily, but it is something to be said that there didn't seem to be any sort of reaction by betting markets to this phenomena. Travel difference came back negative and statistically significant, which might suggest that betting markets in 2019 at least didn't properly capture travel distance. More research needs to be done kind of looking at that variable. We broke out the results into favorites and underdogs. The betting literature identifies multiple instances where underdogs or betting behaviors and pricing tend to vary a little bit, whether you're talking about a home favorite or a home underdog. And this pretty much supports that conclusion, especially for home underdogs. So the games in the last 10, if a home underdog plays more games relative to their opponent in the previous 10 days, their win probability is lower than what would be implied by their actual win probability. So the markets might not be capturing that phenomena. Game day, this is an interesting result. Game day interacted with our season variable. So this is the game day effect for 2020, is positive and statistically significant, specifically for underdogs. So again, this gives us some evidence that it likely was a bunch of underdogs, essentially, who in September were winning a lot more games than would be expected. Again, small sample randomness, maybe. Something related to September call-ups, maybe. It's hard to definitively answer that question. Travel distance is consistent that we saw on the previous slide. So some final conclusions, again, we want to emphasize, none of our results showed any evidence that fans had a negative impact on home field advantage. In fact, in some cases, there was an increasing effect of home field advantage. But again, moral of the story, and again, part of that might be due to a small sample variance, but in terms of identifying, did they have a negative effect? The answer is there does not appear to be evidence of that, which fits with the statistical evidence of just a significantly higher home field advantage in 2020. This home field advantage increase as the season went on could be statistical noise, could be driven especially by that fourth quarter in 2020 with underdogs, could have something to do with players growing more comfortable with playing conditions. It's hard to differentiate that effect. There might be something with travel, but again, not something that we've been able, that something that likely needs more research to identify and really separate of our main results, okay? So again, thank you everyone for watching. I want to acknowledge SABR. This is an awesome conference. This is my second year presenting virtually. I'm looking forward to the days we can go back to in-person presentations. And I look forward to seeing people in person in the near future. But again, thank you all very much. And we will go through, I guess, some of the questions that are listed. Okay, let's see. Let's see, Alex asks, what other factors may have played into this higher home win percentage? Perhaps reduced travel for home teams gave them more of an advantage. So like I said, I mean, we pulled out the things that we thought were that would have impacted home field advantage that we could measure. Travel was one of them. Travel didn't appear like it had any sort of statistically significant effect on home field advantage. The idea behind fatigue, we wanted to capture that, didn't seem to do anything. So we think we've captured all the major differences between 2019 and 2020 that could be controlled for. But I mean, there might be something else. Let's see, Tom asks, did you consider comparing home field advantage in 2020 to the same for the first 60 games of other seasons, or it's the last 60 games of other seasons? So our model does that indirectly. We include the other games in the season, but the way the model works is, especially when we synchronize the seasons and do things like that, it does control for, it does make that direct comparison, at least with 2019, which was our control year. We don't include other years. The reason we stick with just 2019 as our control year is because we wanted to make sure, again, with changing rules and things that are just changing over time, we wanted to make it as close to a control treatment group as we possibly could. If the more you reach back and the more you add to that control group, the more variance you introduce when you compare the 2 years. So we wanted to be careful about that. Phil asks, when I hear about travel loads, I think of Seattle and how the Mariners have the most air miles of any team every season. I have to think that Seattle's travel loads was reduced considerably in 2020 compared to normal seasons. Is that true? If so, did you see any on-field consequences of that? So I can't speak to Seattle specifically. I don't remember what their home field advantage was or their home field win percentage was. I can say that their travel was a lot less in 2020. They didn't make any cross-country trips. So just inevitably, it's going to be less. In fact, if I go ahead a little bit, this travel diff, these extreme values that you see, let's say for the away team, this is Seattle right here. This extreme of the distribution is Seattle. So, I mean, by definition, we know, given how much smaller the max is, that there's no way Seattle did it nearly as much as they did in 2019. So I can't speak to Seattle's specifically. We have to be careful of making conclusions based on one particular team. They only play 30 home games. So you have to kind of rely on the aggregate sample. Same thing with, for example, Toronto, who played all their home games in Buffalo. You have to be careful trying to make specific conclusions about any one team, just because sample size for any particular team is relatively small. So you have to rely on this overall model results. So we had a question, there's a couple of historical cases of no fans in the stands. There was the Baltimore riots one on April 29, 2015. There was no fans in the stands there. That's the only example of games without home field advantage. The question was, is there anything interesting from that game and does it compare to what we see in 2020? It's hard to say with one game. Again, so that's the thing we have to be careful about. There is variability in individual game outcomes. So relying on one game evidence is problematic. It's why you need enough of a sample size to, part of the reason why we could do what we do is we can compare 2019 and 2020. One thing I do want to say also, our results are very similar to papers published by Fisher and Hotcap that look at the same home field advantage effect, but in German soccer. So their league started the season and then they had the COVID stop and then they finished the season without fans in the stands. So they do something very similar to us and their results are pretty similar. They show no effect of this in the second half of the season. They show no effect of fans in the stands on home field advantage. I'd be interested to see what this looks like for other American sports, especially college sports and the NFL, where you think of this concept of home field advantage being a lot more. traditionally home field advantage in baseball is less relative to some of the US sports. Okay, let's see. So there's a question, what about a team's last game at home before hitting the road? Similarly, what about a team's first game back at home following a road trip? Are home teams more likely to lose the first game back at home if they're returning from a longer road trip? I don't know. I don't think I have an answer for that question. I don't know if it would be different between 2019 and 2020. I think that's something that would probably be consistent between the two. Maybe there'd be some effect again because of travel load and things like that. I don't have a good answer to that question, but I don't think it would have any bearing on these results though. Michael asked, did the new extra inning rules affect home team win percentage in extra inning games? What about 7-inning doubleheaders? It's a good question. Again, I don't know if we have enough data to suggest exactly, to make any sort of definitive statements on that. I think there's a lot of good stuff from FanGraphs where they posted about kind of the strategical elements of it. And I'd encourage you to definitely look in that direction because they did talk, I've read a couple articles where they did talk about kind of the strategical elements in play. Our paper doesn't have an answer for it. Our no team home designated variable showed no evidence of no statistical significance against relatively small sample, but at least that would capture some of the last lick stuff. I think the extra inning rule is, or the extra inning rule and the double inning, double header, shorter double headers would be interesting to look at, especially as we get more data in the upcoming seasons. Let's see. I think we have time for one, maybe two questions. So Chris asked, would it be that later in the season, there were more makeup games and games at home, but the home team was not home designated and that led to a higher win percentage later in the season? I don't think so. I think that would have gotten picked out by our variable. Since there wasn't anything statistically significant there, I don't think that that's what drove that. I guess it's hard to be definitive on that answer, but I don't think that that would be, at least our results don't show evidence of that. I guess I'll do one more question. Let's see. Okay, good. Last question from Brianne. Do you believe there would be a difference this season with home field advantage or advantages from going to stadiums with a slight amount of fans to no fans in the other stadiums? So that's a really interesting question. I don't think, based on our results, the answer would be no. Based on our results, fans have no effect. So that would be that. I think the better way to definitively answer that question would be to compare it to what happened in the NFL. I haven't seen any research that shows definitive proof one way or the other. Because in the NFL, you saw a decent amount of variation. Our results would suggest no, that there won't be any effect. Okay. Anyway, thank you all so much for listening. If you have any questions, feel free to shoot me an email. And I know we got to keep going. So again, thank you, everybody.